Hello, coffee makers, not coffee takers. I am Dr. Joseph J. Burt Miller Jr., and he is Alfredo Nash, and we are your hosts of the Cyber Coffee Hour. We are two Mount Vernon products sharing our experiences and stories and those of our amazing guests. We aim to share knowledge, elevate understanding, and foster a sense of belonging in this vast cyberspace. So for today's show, we're going to have a coffee chat with multi-award winning cybersecurity leader and author of API Security for White Hat Hackers and international speaker, Confident Stably. Oh, man. So our guest, Ms. Confident Stably, is Africa's most celebrated female cybersecurity leader, author of API Security for White Hat Hackers, talent developer, and gender inclusion actionist. Confidence excels in translating cybersecurity concepts into digestible insights for diverse audiences. Her YouTube series, API Kitchen, explains API security using culinary metaphors. In its debut season, the series amassed over 1 million views across social media as Confidence served up a banquet of API security wisdom. She recently won the Cybersecurity Woman of 2023 award and holds several other recognitions. Beyond her advisory roles on various boards, Confidence leads CyberSafe Foundation, a foremost non-governmental organization, or what we're more familiar with, nonprofit, devoted to fostering a digitally inclusive and secure landscape in Africa. She is also the founder of Merkle Fence and Application Security as a Service consulting company. Confidence Stably, welcome to the Cyber Coffee Hour.
Thank you so much, Dr. Sure. Joseph and Nash. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you for joining us.
Yes. This is amazing. Because, you know, we've been trying to get you on for God knows how long. So, I mean, the schedule's been, you know, I mean, it wasn't working. But, hey.
We made it work.
Made it do what it do.
You know, yeah.
But how you been? I mean, you know, I got tired just reading all your accolades. But, I mean, I know you must be tired, man. But, how are you? Like, you know, like, what's the latest? What's been going on?
I'm good. I'm just working towards, you know, getting my book in people's hands. You know, You and I were chatting even just a few minutes before we started recording. I moved stateside. So, this is the first time I'm saying record that I'm actually now living in the United States of America. So it's
a Cyber Coffee Hour exclusive. Yeah. You heard it here first on the Cyber Coffee Hour. Confident Stably is here in the States. Yeah. Watch out.
Let's go.
Yeah, so it's been a time trying to settle down. It's a different culture out here.
Yeah.
I mean, you and I were just speaking about even how the words we use are different, you know. You say nonprofit, and I would say non-governmental organization to sort of like give a general view of things, you know. So there are those nuances and cultural nuances, and just many other things that I'm trying to get acquainted with. And it's been a very interesting time.
And Mr. Nash, man, how you doing, brother? I see you got the gear on. I see you got the hat. What's going on with you, man?
Listen, man, I'm thriving and surviving. I'm building up, you know, gardens and forests throughout the Chesapeake.
Oh, man. Protect this man at all costs. Yeah. Protect this man at all costs. You know what I'm saying? He's out there saving the earth.
Right. I done made healing salves and pesto from wild forest and plants, and I'm also trying not to fail a landscape design course. So shout out to all the landscape architects and designers, because that class is not easy. So, but yeah, I've been under the radar trying to save the world, you know. Trying not to leave it behind, by the way.
That's what's up.
The movie, right?
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
You've seen a lot of that stuff come to light now because of that movie. You start looking a little different, like,
maybe paranoid even.
Right.
How long could these cybersecurity lights stay on? You know?
Like, do I have enough water stacked up somewhere in my house?
Right.
You start a couple gardens.
Start thinking about it. You definitely start thinking about it. It makes you like, maybe it's a little more than a movie. I don't know. Yeah. But again, as we have Confidence here, I want to get right to it. So, just want to learn about you. So, you know, definitely what you've been going on. And first, let's touch on a little bit about your about your series, API Kitchen, your YouTube series. So, you know, so API Kitchen has gained, you know, significant amount of recognition for its approach explaining API security using those culinary metaphors, as we talked about in the intro. So, like, what like sparked this unique perspective? Like, how did you come about, like what made you think about doing that, connecting, you know, API and kitchen and the culinary stuff? Like, and also, what made you think, like, okay, doing it this way is going to really resonate with the audience? Like, so what made you get to that point?
I like the use of the word resonate, because that's often what I try to really achieve. So I really like things I do to be relatable. The only way something can be relatable to a person is if it resonates with them. So
right.
I would ask, if I spoke to you about something and I used coffee, for example, to explain it, would it resonate with you, Dr. Joseph and Naz?
For sure.
Exactly. You know, because that's something we have every day. That's something we enjoy. And so right. For me, the whole API Kitchen idea came from a couple of places, and I will share all the little parts where this came from and really informed this decision to go ahead with the idea and execute on it. So the first key thing is that I like to create relatable things, and I found that, you know, one of the key things that hold us like together as humans, even if you're white, green, yellow, brown, blue, whatever color we are, we eat food, right? There is no one of us that can survive even, you know, 1 week without food. We all eat food, right? And so for me, it was picking up on that. And that was why I chose culinary metaphors. Because if I was to describe an API attack with, say, a lasagna, you would easily be able to pick up on that, right? Because that's something, you know, possibly you may not know fully how it's made, but you sort of like have some idea around what the ingredients would be, or where you would source them, and how you possibly cook them. Or you could simply Google it and understand it. So for me, it was relating to that. The next key thing is whether or not we all eat food, but also some of us cook food, so we know the process. So cooking that was also something that I could relate to as a woman. And also for some perspective as well, I come from Nigeria, and in many parts of Africa as a whole, as a continent, women are looked at as sometimes people who should be seen but not heard, you know. It's a thing of, you know, there's some parts where you should be, there's some places where you shouldn't be. So in fact, there was around the time I started API Kitchen, there was a very senior leader, a political leader, who had said that women belong in the kitchen and in the other room. He means in the bedroom. So for me, I also wanted to change that.
He's a pleasure to be around, huh?
You know, I had to, you know, repurpose that and say, and because I'm one woman who really owns my identity, I am not saying I don't belong in the kitchen.
Right.
I love the kitchen, right? It's where I can make the meals I really love and enjoy. But I also belong everywhere else I want to belong. And so for me, that could be the boardroom, that could be, you know, on a stage, that could be, you know, me teaching, that could be me, you know, doing some great work in cyber. And all of those things encompass parts of me. So choosing API Kitchen as a theme was also a way of empowering women like me to see their multiple sides. You can be this woman and just be many other versions of you still talking one. And so that was for me, I would say, a nice, gentle protest, let me put it that way, of being in the kitchen and sharing technical knowledge of APIs from the kitchen. So it was just showing the many parts and many possibilities for women. And you see how subtle that is? But I've received so many emails from women telling me, just seeing you in that kitchen talking and sharing those things that were technical, that would have been difficult for me to understand, and just seeing you in that kitchen was a way of, you know, reinforcing the fact that I could be anything I want to be. I mean, the show is not about that. But you see, the power of presentation is also very evident there. Women need to see all of these sort of representations, women living their best lives, for example, women living their truth, women living their many sides. And for me, that's what API Kitchen also represents. It's not just about sharing knowledge, but it's sharing knowledge in a way that's empowering, especially for a very minority group, very underrepresented group, very top down group, if I was to say that. Because imagine being told you belong just in the position of procreating and feeding other people. I mean, who is talking about the other things you're interested in? I mean, how dehumanizing can that possibly be? But those are the things women hear every day in my part of the world. And so for me, every day I exist as Confidence Stavely, living my full truth, living fully and openly on these stages that I happen to share this spotlight. Thanks also to you for giving me this platform. You're showing other women what's possible.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, I appreciate that confidence. So let's jump into the next section we have here too. As the founder in Cyber Girls Fellowship, Africa's most female-focused cybersecurity training program, you made significant strides in promoting inclusion and diversity in the cybersecurity field. Can you share a specific success story or impact that exemplifies the importance of such initiatives and bridging the gender gap that you mentioned in technology? And some some of those can get tied into what you mentioned previously as well, right?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I am spoiled for choice in terms of success stories. There's so many, but one that really just warms my heart every time I think about it is the story of Kachipa. I think I've shared her story so many times because, I mean, it really just resonates with me. Kachipa is a girl based in South Africa. She used to wait tables at a pizza restaurant and literally lived off tips, you know, which also meant, you know, her standard of living, where she had to live, how she had to work, what sort of facilities were available to her was really, really poor, right? She came on our program and she was able to get the cybersecurity training. She went through our training which usually lasts for 7 months. She went through the training. But a key thing that we also do that I am very particular about is we always look to align what we're teaching the girls on the program to what industry needs. So nice. You're aligning what the industry needs to what they get to learn. So straight out that our doors, they can provide value to employers. And for a lot of people who are listening to this, I may not know anything about Cyber Girls. We like Nasha said, we're the biggest cybersecurity fellowship for young women on the continent. So we provide free cybersecurity training, we provide mentorship, and then we help place the girls, right? And so we currently have fellows in 27 African countries. So you're talking quite a lot of African countries. And we provided this training to Kachipa. But part of the training as well, like I mentioned, is we're not ticking a box. We have our eyes fixed on a particular ball. And that ball is that underrepresentation of women and even the lack of skills on the continent. So for perspective, I'll share some data. The World Bank has said that women make up 9% of the cybersecurity workforce in Africa, even though they make up 50% of the population on the continent. So yeah, 91% of the roles are held by men. So when I hear, like, I go to other parts of the world and we speak about it from the global perspective and I hear 20 to 25% women representation, I'm like, the day we have 25% representation on African continent, I would throw a party. Because that is literally what it is for us, right? We are so far in terms of presentation, and all of the things I've earlier mentioned all stack up to explain why this is the case. So let's go back to Kachipa's story. So Kachipa came on the program, got the 7 months of training, but towards the tail end, we also did a lot of soft skills training and also showed people like Kachipa how to position themselves in the job market. So it's not like we're feeding them everything. Oh, this is how to get a job. This we arrange you with someone to hire. Yes, we get to do a job fair, but we also teach them how to catch the fish, right? So we had this this part of the training where she also learned how to position herself. She got an interview 1 month after graduating, and she nailed the interview and got a job. So her first role was a cybersecurity role with a company that's traded in the Johannesburg Stock Exchange, which is the largest stock exchange in Africa. So this girl comes straight out of our program, gets there and she enjoys 450% increase in her income. I want you to picture that. Now, because a lot of times... That sounds
like critical infrastructure to me.
You know, because a lot of times you think about cyber, and what we think about is how information security generally helps us protect enterprises, right? But we forget that it can also be a socioeconomic improvement tool. And mm-hmm. for people like Kachipa, it wasn't just about getting the skills. It was what it did for her life. You know, she's moved on another job now and already, you know, increased her income. I mean, guys, you know what this is like, right? Mm-hmm. You get the first mm-hmm. job and thereafter you're flying on wings once you're good at your job. And so Kachipa is one of several stories that show that, one, we need to be able to design programs if we're thinking about, you know, ensuring equity and ensuring representation. We need to be able to design programs that are tailored for women and tailored in a way that we are creating a pipeline directly. It's not just about doing some training program, but we're creating a pipeline from those programs to the workforce. That's the way we can get them in. Because a lot of times women want to invest that time, considering that we also have time poverty as women. That's a challenge we also have, right? Mm-hmm. But we want to invest that time and see how it translates most times to earning increase or, you know, income increase, you know, potential increase that happens because of that those skills gained. So that is one story that really resonates with me because it shows how you can have that pipeline built and move women right into the workforce and create that with not just an intentional curriculum, but also a community that really supports women through all of the stages of their lives that you could possibly think about. I mean, we have women on the program who get to have children. I mean, I don't know if you can imagine, you know, women trying to do all of the things they're doing with a baby and passing the exam that they need, certification exams they need to pass. And providing that sort of support is the key thing that we are very good at. And I'm very grateful that I get to work with the best people as well to get this to happen because trust me, I could sound known as a superstar, but I am not. I have like a village of people that make this happen.
Awesome. Yeah, the network, the bridge, like I said, it sounds like that fellowship is the bridge in critical infrastructure, which is awesome. Yeah, it's tremendously awesome.
Thank you.
Right. So with your extensive speaking engagements at international conferences and recognition as a thought leader in the cybersecurity industry, how do you stay abreast of emerging trends in technology or emerging trends in innovation in this field and incorporate that knowledge into your advocacy efforts, like the efforts you just mentioned?
Okay. So for me, I always think that you should listen more than you speak. So for me, that has also meant that If I'm speaking 5% of the time, I want to have to listen for multiples more of that, you know, and learn way more. So I believe that speaking sets me up for continuous growth. It's sort of like a pressure point because you can't give what you don't have, right?
Right.
Yeah, so it sort of forces me, and I'm very grateful again for the opportunities that keep me on my toes, like speaking. And so it makes me want to listen more, want to learn more, want to hear what's happening. So I've built certain habits over time that has really, really helped me. One of the habits I've built is I read a cybersecurity article every day.
Nice.
Yeah, so I've also built that into the flow for the Cyber Girls Fellowship. So we call, there's something we call one cyber thing a day. So we have a Slack channel, and when they come and just dump, brain dump on what they've read. It's not compulsory, but I encourage the girls to do that because it's something that has worked really well for me. The fact that I'm reading one article a day means that I'm able to know very quickly what's happening across the world. I'm able to even draw patterns because that's what happens to your brain over time. I'm able to quickly recognize patterns and recognize progressions. And I'm also able to also forecast based on what has happened in the past, right? Because this is a habit I've had for a long time. I also really invest in knowledge. So I'm always having some sort of quarterly knowledge targets. So it could be a new certification. It could be a new book. It could be a new tool that I'm learning how to use for fun or because I think that is an expansion of my knowledge as necessary. But I love that that continuous thrill, because that's why InfoSec is just amazing. Unlike a lot of areas where you can sort of like at some point know it all, it's absolutely I stand corrected, but it's almost impossible to know it all in cyber, right? And so that continuous thrill just feeds the adrenaline junkie side of me, right? So I'm constantly creating those habits that help me stay in tune, those quarterly targets, those daily targets. And I also have one that's weekly as well. I read a report every week. So I'm reading different reports. For example, this week is the Verizon report that was released. That sort of like is helping me understand. So what has changed? What hasn't changed? What are the issues, aside my personal experiences as well? Because your personal experiences at your workplace depends on where you work, could be like a little dot in the whole scheme of things. So having those pockets of habits that help me grow, and just a challenge of speaking often and needing to refuel and to refill so I have a lot to give, has been one of the major things that has kept me on. Also my curiosity as well. I'm constantly saying, oh, what does that mean? Oh, I don't understand what that looks like. Oh, you just said something, but I didn't catch a bit of what you said. Could you say that again? Or I didn't quite understand something someone says, and I go and research it and find out and learn more. So I think that childlike curiosity has been quite an immense, helpful thing that I've had.
You know what? No, that's really good, because you're definitely going to run into people who just really don't care, and they just stop reading and stop studying and like, all right, I give up. But yeah, you definitely can't do that here within cybersecurity, because, unless you're retired.
If you retire. The way things are going now.
Or we could retire like four times. We retire and unretire ourselves.
Right. Keep going.
Well, we could retire and work somewhere else and not doing cybersecurity. You're not working here. But but confidence, as you mentioned, just talk about having that childlike curiosity. I'm sure that helped you when we talk about your book. And I just want to talk a little bit about your book with the API security for White Hat hackers. So that offers insights into offensive defense strategies for secure API implementation. So, but like, what are some like key takeaways that you hope that readers, maintaining that same curiosity that you try to embody. What are some takeaways that readers should gain from your book, particularly when we talk about enhancing their understanding of API security and, bolstering their cybersecurity practices?
So a lot of times when we talk about API security, a lot of times we talk about it, but we have a lot of material around the offensive side of things, right? For me, I wanted a piece of material that balances that out a bit. So you have something for the offense and something for the defense, in a way that allows people on both sides of the aisle, or even people sitting in the middle of the aisle, right? To really, on the aisle, to have people sitting there to be able to reach across and get knowledge that just helps them, in their work. So while I speak to people learning how to hack APIs, people like, that are doing bug bounty programs and, showing them how to get those bugs. And of course, hoping that all of this is used in a very ethical way, right? Putting that caveat there. While I do that in the book, I'm also speaking to mid-management, mid-senior level staff as well, the people that are going to manage senior management, and saying this is how we should be going around API security and enhancing API security posture, right? Just ensuring that they also have something to work with. And that's what this book was really designed to do. So I would say that one of the key things that I want people to walk away when they they read this book, sort of like best practices to make sure that APIs are secure by design and they're implemented with that in mind. So we've moved away from just dumping things out there in the public, applications that have bugs known and some that we don't care to know, right? There is now a focus by, of course, driven by the federal government now, right, around making sure that we are not creating software, for example, we're not creating applications that have these bugs. So now it's no longer kicking the can down and saying users should make sure that they do this and they do that to protect themselves. The government is also driving that we have tools and solutions and softwares that are built to be secure by design. And that will come from a lot of other things, APIs playing that major role, because APIs are the glue of the internet, right? They're the plumbing system. They're the thing that connects, you know, the different systems that we get to interact with while we're consuming maybe one application. And so for me, in this book, it was about making sure that people who use APIs, who design them, for example, are bearing that in mind, ensuring that secure design principles are really followed for a robust, you know, system that is very resilient as well. So straight out our doors, those APIs are able to effectively mitigate risk. They're also able to bolster the resilience of the applications. They also really uphold integrity of the digital infrastructures that they're deployed in. So what are the key pillars, or rather the key benefits of this would be that first, they will be protected from majority of the vulnerabilities. Now, a key thing to note here as well is that the top three API security vulnerabilities account for over 80% of the breaches that we currently have. So if, for example, we're taking care of that 80%, we're taking care of those three vulnerabilities, those top vulnerabilities, we're able to take care of most of the issues that could go wrong. So if this is the case, if we master these design principles, then we can protect the infrastructure against most vulnerabilities. The next key advantage of doing this is that we can then establish like robust security controls, because security is not something that we do as a one-off, right? There are different things that we must ensure are put in place, and we have to keep checking that those controls are actually working as designed and to the best of, you know, to the way they were designed, right? Encryption as a control, to access control policies also as a control, to authentication mechanisms, knowing where to have them and if we need them, you know, are key things that must be put in place. How to do that and how to determine that are some of the key things that are also in the book. Now, I'll pull back to a recent incident, I think happened this year, with a certain project management company, right? They had an API. Yeah, they had
we're not naming names.
We're not naming names. No. We had 15 million email addresses in the public because of what they call it, not a data breach, right? And so with something like this, what has been changed is what authentication, right? Authentication, just identifying that a particular step should have been done only by authenticated users, right? That's how they fix the problem. But imagine if this was done before that scraping was done. I mean, it would definitely have saved a lot of people what could possibly happen because of that particular scraping that has happened. So knowing whether or not controls or what controls should be put and what authentication mechanisms is a key thing that I'll be taking away from here as well. A key thing as well with the book that I try to establish is the importance of cultivating a culture of resilience. So if we are not, if we're not building, sorry.
That's the part I was a little waiting on right there.
Honestly, if we're making sure that secure APIs, you know, are really part of, or rather, we are able to achieve secure APIs because we have a culture of resilience already and adaptability in the way we are building our whole infrastructure, then it would definitely be achieved, and we achieved not just with a one-time effort, but will be things like continuous monitoring, vulnerability management, security patching, and just generally individuals within the organization taking proactive steps to make sure that all of this is achieved. There's also another pillar that I really, really hammer on in the book, which is incident response capabilities. If we're not preparing for APIs in the rainy days, we are not also really integrating APIs and collecting all of those metrics from APIs, we can't know when something is wrong. We can't even, you know, track back and lay out chain of events that led to that particular incident, right? So ensuring that we're enhancing incident response capabilities is a core part. And the last key thing, which will be something that people walk away from this book with, is the power of strengthening compliance and regulatory adherence. Because more than ever before, the guys with the what do they call it? You know, when a judge is hitting, what's it called?
The mallet.
Sorry?
No. Yeah. No, the judge's mallet.
Oh, the juror. Yeah, okay.
The judge's what?
Gavel.
Gavel. Yeah. Yes. So the guys with the gavel.
I said mallet. Well, yeah, right. Gavel. Gavel. Yeah. That's a proper.
I was thinking adjudication. I'm like, where are we going with this?
No.
Yeah. The guys with the gavel are coming for everyone. I mean, for the first time, for example, PCI DSS now has requirements for APIs. So if we're not adhering to compliance and regulatory requirements, then we're in hot soup. We don't want to be.
So in your experience with that same compliance, does your book touch on, is there an apprehension, like you said, middle of the aisle or middle of the road with business accepting pen testing this secure design, like knocking all the buttons down and testing everything? Or is there like still a middle of the road approach to that level of compliance?
That must be something that is done. So API goes through all sorts of tests. Interestingly, the one that is left behind is a security test. So we have APIs. I mean, all tests for security, like, it's the irony of it, right? Mm-hmm. So we are advocating that there should be a lot of automation in the process and ensuring that every API is tested. There should then be very often routine tests that are done again for APIs, generally speaking, right? So it should be something that's automated, but also with another process to then check that automation and ensuring that security test is done very, very thoroughly. So that's a key part that the book also addresses, because we can't put penetration testing in the back burner and not expect the things that we're seeing happening, to not happen anymore. No, we would need to find the bugs. We need to find the loopholes before the bad guys find them. And that's what we must prioritize.
Yeah, I agree.
So, you know, one of the things I do admire about you, Confidence, is, you know, you're doing all these things, and in order to keep everything and try to keep everything in line, you got to have great leadership skills. And that's one of the things I do admire about you, is your leadership. So when we're talking about that, when we talk about like leading different teams or cybersecurity teams, you know, and across like multiple countries, as we talked about, I'm sure that presents like different challenges and opportunities. So with that in mind, can you discuss like particularly any like challenging scenario that you've had to encounter when dealing with these different diverse cybersecurity teams, and how you navigated to ensure you had that effective collaboration and also that leads to success in your cybersecurity initiatives?
Okay, so I would say that I want to throw my hands up in the air and say I hate to sound like I'm dancing on a grave, but but sometimes it can feel like that. And this story that I'm going to share is just right there. You know, it can feel like that. So sometimes you find that you could do the right things, talk the right way, try to get the right people around the table, but they've not seen why cyber is important. So I couldn't be bothered. Like, so why should I give even 2 minutes of my time to this, right? I don't want to say that. I don't want to say that word. Yeah, why should I give 2 minutes of my time to that, right? And you find that, unfortunately, experience becomes the best teacher to such people. And so we had one incident like that we had sat down, tried to help this organization get their cyber, their cyber security strategy, get a roadmap as well to, you know, begin that journey to resilience. And one of the stakeholders on the table just said, why do we need this? We don't need this. Like, this is stuff for people that are in other countries that are very, you know, they're very advanced in technology. So why are we bothering ourselves with this? And my response was, you know, paint out the scenario, what could go wrong, you know, what could be lost, you know, what could be gained also if they do the right things. Because I also find that when we speak about cybersecurity, we only talk about losses, but when we talk about it also from the perspective of gains, like if you're doing cyber right, that could be a marketing strategy as well, right? And so I tried to lay this all out to this particular person, and they couldn't be bothered listening to me, right? And unfortunately, 1 month down the line, our phones were buzzing.
Wow.
There had been a hit.
Say that again? Oh, yeah. See,
they got hit.
That's called. No.
I lack
the empathy right now.
I'm talking about dancing on a grave. So it was a case of, we didn't need to talk anymore. It was just, come help us. Come help us get this sorted. And I hated the fact that we had to do a post-mortem because we had to fix something. And I mean, it could have been neater. Like,
so you're telling me, so this jabroni is giving you a hard time. He's giving you a hard time. You're trying to prevent some stress, and then he ends up getting hit, and now you're trying to clean up the mess.
Exactly. I'm gonna say it. Good for him. Good for him.
That's what he gets.
You know, you can say that there's no technology, there's no social engineering, there's nothing like that. You know, good for him.
It can feel so. I'm like, you know what? If we could rewind time by 1 month, I'm not saying whatever I would have done would have made sure there's no way you would have been hit, but possibly it may not have been this bad. And that's what a lot of people still are grappling with, understanding and seeing that we should make sure that it's not just making sure that we are protected all around, because 100% protection is not possible, right? But it's ensuring that we are not fruits on the ground, because some of us are not even low-hanging fruits, right? We're just fruits on the ground. And so that is what some of the work that I've done has really exposed me to. And also the fact that people have different incentives for doing things, right? finding those incentives both within my team and ensuring that we are meeting those incentives, and also finding those incentives where ethical also for the people that we serve, is also something I've also really learned in my leadership journey. People do things for different reasons, right? And just some people just want to do things because it makes them look like superstars in the organizations. So for me, it's just finding what that making you look good would look like, and I would help you look good, right? So that's one key thing, one key takeaway as well from my leadership journey that's really helped me just bring together different people to achieve the goal that I want to achieve. And I just shared that story because we could easily look at it always from the wins, the ones that I have won because of great leadership. But I just also wanted to show the one that I have lost, and life has taught, you know, all of the lessons that I needed to.
So everyone listening out there, you know, please take heed to this story, because if someone's trying to help you out, you know, that karma will come at you. That karma will come back and get you. It'll bite. It'll bite back.
They call us a savant leader. There it is. You know, confidence is the greatest savior.
Yeah.
So that's great. I definitely appreciate you sharing that with us. So as we just kind of dive in a bit, just learn a little bit more about you, and also just like what you like to do as far as your spare time as well. But I'll kind of start this off. And I think you kind of touched on this a little bit, but when we talk about like from your journey as how you got started, you know, what are some obstacles you say that you've had to encounter to get to where you are today?
Mm-hmm. As far as, you know, challenges come, I've had my very good share, maybe not fair, but quite a good share. But before I begin to speak about them, I think that we always look at challenges from just a negative perspective, but I dare say that challenges also have a positive side. And for me, I've just, you know, really wanted to focus on that and switch it up, you know, look at it from another perspective. And so some of the challenges I've had have actually been some of the key reasons that I'm very dogged, you know, where I
had to get very what?
Very dogged. you know, like, dogged. Yeah, so I really just go for things. And
nice,
and,
determined.
Yeah, I'm determined. I'm resilient out of the box, you know?
Right.
You know, because I eat resilience for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. So because of all of the challenges I've had to face, right? So some of the challenges I've had, for example, starting off my career was even access to a device, right? I couldn't afford a laptop for so long. So I had to first continue my learning in an ICT learning center that I had access to a desktop to sort of like learn and practice as well. And then I also had to learn some of the skill that was an informal skill to help me save up to be able to afford a laptop. Now, also to share a bit of why that's a major thing I want to spotlight is because the data shows that women are disproportionately hit, you know, by things like access to tools and devices. So more men have access to devices and tools than women can afford, you know. So for me, how I worked around that challenge was I learned how to make straw hats. So, I learned how to make straw hats. And I used to make straw hats years ago. And it was from making straw hats I saved to buy my first computer. So that
hustle
was
mode.
Hustle.
That's what I like to hear right there.
Hustle, you know, so I had
sold
to do
straw hats. To
yeah.
Get the first funding for your
yeah,
laptop.
I sold
that's
straw hats, you know. So
congratulations on that one.
Thank you so much. So those are some of the key things I did to be able to access that. I also had a challenge with getting my first opportunity. Like a lot of people, you know, face this challenge. So for me, what I did was I took on a lot of contract roles that were sort of like informal. And with that, I was able to stack on some experience to be able to prove that I was worth taking a bet on. And so that helped me dabble into quite a lot. So I have quite a very strong foundational base. And I always say that life is sort of like a mosaic, right? When it all comes together, all of those pieces just make sense. It's like a beautifully rehearsed opera. It feels like one sound is all over the place, but because later on it comes into a harmony, it just makes sense. So all of those scattered experiences account for some of the things I'm able to do today in a certain way that the combination of experiences and skills gives me a certain level of value that is just unique to me.
Up level the skill, like the unmatched resilience right there.
Yeah.
So with that hustle, with the grinding that you did, it with the resilience, I have probably one of the most important questions of the show right now. Do you have a favorite coffee preference that you get?
Okay, so I would need to break your ego on that. I don't drink coffee. Water is my coffee.
Hey. I was hoping that like it was like a super mix or a super blend or something. Oh, so no coffee at all.
No coffee. I think, you know what's funny? I have a mother who drinks coffee so much. I don't know if it's because she drank coffee so much that I had too much coffee around the house and I didn't like coffee anymore. You know, so maybe that was it. So I drink a lot of water. That's what I do. So water is to me what coffee would be to most coffee drinkers. It keeps me awake. I mean, it's funny to say that. It keeps me hydrated, and I actually enjoy drinking water.
Okay. So next question, too, with on adjacent to everything you mentioned with the Cyber Fellowship and your book, is there any other projects that you're working on, personal, professional projects that might be working on?
Yes, I am. I'm working on something as well that that is going to be able to help talent on the African continent be able to provide their services to the global north. So that's something I'm very, very keen on as well. I mean, we could create a huge talent pipeline if we're not able to connect them to work opportunities enough. I mean, it really just doesn't underscore the importance of it and doesn't help us really deliver on the gains that we're looking to achieve. So connecting talent to the global north is something I'm really, really passionate about and really, really keen on, and I'm working on for the benefit of both sides, you know, of the divide, both the global north and talent on the African continent. And again, because I love data, sorry, I like to throw those things out, right?
So wait, time out. What is that's a cultural reference. It has to be, because I don't know. What is the global north?
Okay. So there's a global south, and there's a global north, and maybe some other west or whatever it is. So most African countries, or the whole of most of Africa, is actually described as a global south. So you have sort of like emerging markets. Those places called the global south. While the global north would be very developed markets and, you know, very advanced countries like the United States, like Canada, you know, those are the ones we describe as global north.
Thank you for that. We got that on the record. I'm hope we get comments for that one, because I was lost. I'm like, global north. I've never heard that. So thank you
so
much.
It's a political statement. So trust me, I understand. Yeah, it's a very political statement. It's like saying, there's one that used to be used to describe Africa that was a bit condescending. So it was switched for global south.
Wow, check that out. Well, thank you for that explanation. And so you tapped into the pipeline for both sides of the fence, right?
Yeah.
And you are kind of like the supply chain. So you're stewarding those folks in those emerging areas, two different areas throughout Africa.
Absolutely.
And what was that project called again, if you don't mind?
So it's a service that's coming under Merkle Fence, an organization, a company I was introduced as, of course, the founder right now. So I'm also adding that to our capabilities at the moment, specifically around security operation centers and how we get to have some of them from Africa serving the rest of the world as well. And I was also saying prior to when I provided some clarification on Global North, I was saying that Africa is a very young continent. It's the youngest continent in the world. So if you check our median age, it's around 18. So we are a very young continent, and we're exploding in numbers. So if we have such a young population, then we can leverage that as well to ensure that we're feeding, we're becoming assets to the rest of the world, and not you know, taking, but also being able to give, which is something that microfinance will be able to facilitate.
So play those data points back. You said the average median age is 18?
It's 18.
So they're directly tapping into the youth of the continent to contribute to those workforces.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow, that's interesting. Okay. So I think the last one we have here, are there any hobbies or interests in adjacent? I know you like hustle mode, you know, but do you have any free time or any downtime? What do you do if you do ever get some free time or have any hobbies?
Yeah, I'm creating free time, honestly. I mean that very, very intentionally. I'm creating free time. I'm learning how to watch movies these days. And
movies? Which ones are you watching?
So I'm seeing one that is called, oh my days, Bring It Back. It's actually a crime fiction. Oh my days, I'm trying to remember it. There's an older man who has a network intelligence, and then there's this young daughter who he doesn't know at some point in the movie that is his daughter. He finds out, but it's constantly helping her solve crime cases.
I think I know what you're talking about. I don't remember the name.
Yeah, it's a very short name that's somehow just leaving my mind now.
Is it on Netflix?
It's on Netflix.
Yeah, I know. I can't remember the name now either. Dang. We'll put it in the show notes. I just saw the promotion for that.
So I'm seeing that. I'm also seeing Suits. So like I mentioned to you, Suits.
Suits, what's that?
It's a series on Netflix as well.
So it's
Harvey Specter. I think that's his name. That's a star for the movie. So what that's helping me do is also understand America's legal system and sort of like how it works here. So it's part of my plans to adapt, you know, to the American culture. So yes, I'm also seeing that as well.
So you got to watch this other one. I think it's called, I'm checking out the preview now. You should check out, I think it's called White Collar. It's kind of the same. Yeah, it has the same aesthetic of like a criminal that helps like FBI track down other white collar criminals. And I think she kind of gives me that vibe too.
Oh, I'll check it out. I'll check out White Collar then. Those are some of the key things I'm doing. Maybe I would get on your side of maybe checking, you know, gardening and doing some earthy work.
Hey, this came as a side quest because, hey, check out Fallout too. You should check out Fallout in Amazon Prime. But this came as a side quest about 2 years ago, closing on my house. I didn't, you know, closing on it. I didn't know anything about the yard, nothing. So, but yeah, absolutely. I got tons of recommendations on this shelf right here. So any books, anything else besides the movies? Is there any other things that you're checking out?
Well, I'm reading some books. So there's this one I'm reading, The Culture Code.
Culture Code.
Yeah, so
I've heard of that one.
Oh,
yeah. Let me check that out. So it's really building teams. I mean, people are interesting and sometimes difficult to manage. So ensuring that you're setting up the groups and everyone, you know, up for success is something that I'm really studying and how successful groups are doing that. So this book has been absolutely phenomenal.
Pair that with Team Topologies. I had to put that book down. It was upsetting me.
Team Topologies?
But Team Topologies sounds exactly the same. It sounds along the same lines of building up those dynamics between
and groups. I just finished this one.
Never split the difference. Why does that sound familiar?
It's about negotiating. It's so good.
I'm adding that to the list.
It's so good. So, and it says you're negotiating as if your life depends on it. Sometimes,
wait, say that again.
Negotiating as if your life depended on it. So
nice.
Out of life and death.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's ship that next day. Let's get a copy of that today.
Nice. Right.
Well, you missed it, Joseph. She does not drink coffee, which I didn't catch in another. Well, all the hustling, we covered the hustling, the grind, the books, you know, everything about resilience, her new accolades and services. Hey, we also covered Global North, which she's in a hustle mode for that too, a new service she's trying to offer. And then she hit me in the heart with not drinking coffee.
I give you a disclaimer, though. I warned you.
Yeah. I missed it, you know.
Wow.
Right.
You know what? That's even more impressive. You're doing all this without a coffee.
Right, exactly. So
that's even more impressive. Exactly. That's amazing.
But confidence,
I definitely appreciate you spending time with us here at the Cyber Coffee Hour. It was a great, great conversation, great time learning about you.
Yep.
Just amazing things that you're doing. Keep doing what you're doing.
Okay.
I'm one of your fans. I know you got a ton of fans. Just know I'm one of them. The Cyber Coffee Hour is one of your fans. So just remember that.
And it's virtual.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So before we go, anything you want to share with our audience? Any last words you want to share with everyone?
I mean, I always like to share what my personal mantra is because, I mean, for me, it just really sets me up, like my name does. Yeah. It sets me up, yeah. And my mantra is one that has driven my growth mindset and I think maybe possibly really back my curiosity that I spoke about earlier on. And the mantra goes thus, good, better, best. I will never rest until my good is better and my better best. So I'm always on the journey of,
Dang, okay.
It's crazy. Hard. It's a nursery rhyme. It's a nursery rhyme. Yeah.
Okay.
It's a nursery rhyme. So it's just as simple as it could get, but then very impactful once it's something that's part and parcel of your life.
That's amazing. That's great.
Like
it. Again, thank you. And thank you for sharing that with us. And thank you to you watching us here. Thank you for tuning in to the Cyber Coffee Hour. And if you enjoyed this episode, please like, share, and subscribe. Follow us on all of our platforms. You can also find the Cyber Coffee Hour on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Google Podcasts. That's a wrap. We're done. We'll catch you on the next one.
Thank you.
Peace.
Cheers, bye.